Greetings, and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I am the Dive Mistress.
And we're going to start off today with a little housekeeping. Apparently, the Dive Mistress recently discovered that we overlooked a few things last time around, or the time previous. Don't remember when it was, so take it away, Dive Mistress.
It was last time. So, last week, we were recording on Mother's Day, so it was our Mother's Day episode. And neither of us actually took the time to type Mother's Day into IMDb. And I would like to thank the anonymous poster on the blog who brought the movie Mother's Day to my attention. Funnily enough, his post coincides with me actually seeing an ad for Mother's Day in a magazine. So I guess
it would have happened either way.
So yeah.
But yeah, so I mean if the actual show weren't proof enough, now you know that we do the least amount of research possible for these.
It's a little embarrassing, really, since all I do all the time is research.
Yeah, apparently you just don't want to do it. You know, that's your day job, and in your night job, the AVOD, you're like, no, I'm not going to do research. See your pants.
So apologies to all the Mother's Day fans out there, and we will promise
Isn't it a trauma movie?
Yeah, it is. Doesn't matter. So apologies.
I don't think it has fans.
Oh, my bad.
The Mother's Day fan.
The Mother's Day fan. Yes.
Yeah, it shares the level of popularity that our podcast has. Why am I just being mean?
Now, yeah, that was uncalled for.
Being mean to the film Mother's Day by comparing to the AVOD. I apologize. The Mother's Day people.
So, moving on from that, I've got something here that I want to share with you.
Please.
And I'm reading it out of the summer movie preview of the May issue of the Famous magazine.
For our American viewers, Famous magazine is a magazine that goes out to every theater in Canada. There used to be two different ones, Tribute and Famous, but when we got down to just one theater chain in the entire country, now there's just Famous magazine.
Right. So this
they no longer have a crossword puzzle, which really pisses me off because it was the easiest damn crossword puzzle in the world, and you just feel like a genius doing it. Easier than the TV Guide crossword puzzle. Okay, sorry.
So this is the review for Inglourious Basterds. Tarantino's World War II spaghetti western. There's so many things wrong with that phrase. I don't even know where to start.
Please start somewhere. Wow.
World War II spaghetti western.
Well, you know Tarantino. He likes to combine things that already exist into new things. He's like a collagist of filmmaking. And he wants to take all of the feel of the, you know, larger than life staging and the brutal violence of a spaghetti western and set that in World War II.
But he's Tarantino, and stemming from the fact that he is an American, he cannot make a spaghetti western. No. Never mind the fact that this movie isn't a western.
I know.
It's like, a war pick.
He's been going around everywhere saying that to people. And I'm like, oh, so really? You went back to the year 1967 and filmed an Italian movie in Spain? That's how you made this film? Is that what you did?
So I felt a need to share that with all of you.
And I got to say, I'm going to have a similar thing for the end of the show to read. A bizarre quote that I think you might enjoy as well. But we will table that for now. Oh, and speaking of tabling, I want to ask you something and something of the people at home. Have you ever noticed how, like, a saying will appear in one thing and then everyone thinks it's cool and it will show up throughout fiction immediately?
I've like never noticed that.
You've never noticed, like,
say yes, because
you've never noticed
no.
A turn of phrase catching on.
Yeah, catching on, but not appearing immediately everywhere in fiction. Maybe on TV.
On TV, yes, on TV is what I meant. I'm sorry, I wasn't clear.
It sounded like he meant in print.
I apologize. On television. Well, what happened is I heard a strange phrase on a television show the other day. right? Actually, not the other day. It was like the season opener of something. Anyway, not important. I heard a turn of phrase on a show like last November, and I had never heard it before. I had never heard anyone use this before.
Right.
Right? And I'm wondering, but then suddenly I've seen it in 7 different shows since. It's like this weird idea spreads around, like that time when there were 4 different shows that talked about Bambi's mother being killed in a forest fire. And it was like this weird situation where 4 different unrelated shows improperly remembered how Bambi's mother died.
That's
like
weird.
And it's like, so did one see one and then another one wanted to make a reference to it, but they were referencing that Simpsons episode where someone said that? It was really strange. Anyway, more importantly, so the what I heard was, put a pin in that. And you don't know what that means, right?
Well,
you know what it means, kind of?
Put a pin, like, it's a good idea, mark it down.
No, it means let's table that for now. It means we have that idea, let's talk about something else. Let's set that aside for later.
That's a terrible
turn of phrase. It's not a good turn of phrase, but it's clear what they said. But I'm saying, I saw it on an episode of Breaking Bad, like last year, or January, whatever. And I've heard it in like 5 different things since. Okay. It's not really clear. It's not a good turn of phrase, but now everybody's using it.
Breaking Bad is a show about meth cookers.
Exactly.
And did a tweaker say it? Because really, anything a tweaker says should not be.
No, it was the considered math. It was the science teacher who's the main character of the show. And
there
it's like,
that
I know, if only. But like, I'm wondering, is this something that everyone watched that episode of Breaking Bad and is like, oh, I like that turn of phrase. It makes us sound cool and hip and modern. Let's use it in our shows. Or was it in like a movie last year that I didn't see and now everyone saw that movie and now they're using it?
I've never heard that before.
Okay. So it's a weird cultural phenomenon that only I have noticed. The term yes. Put a pin in it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then let's put a pin in that. And move. What is wrong with me? Oh, God. All right. I'm sorry. I'm just going to formally apologize for that one now and in writing later. Okay. Let's move on to our actual topics. So the fall schedule is popping up.
Yes.
And there's both good news and bad news. And by which I mean there is only good news. Because our first piece of news is that Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles has been officially canceled. Yay!
I really can't comment since I didn't watch the show.
I know.
I saw the pilot years ago and thought it was really good, but didn't actually bother to watch any of the actual show because I heard it was really bad. So,
yeah.
Even though one of my roommates really loves it. And it's sad news for him, I'm sure, but he's not here right now, so... We can celebrate. Okay.
I gotta say, what the worst thing about it is, you know, I hate the show. And I have a complicated relationship with the show, as anyone, you know, reading my posts or listening to the AVODs back issues. Back issues
you're
of the AVOD.
You're still like the in-print thing.
Yeah, I am. It's terrible. Back issues of the AVOD. Well, no, I have complicated feelings towards the show. Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And I guess it lost me right in episode 2 or 3 when they're like, oh yeah, Terminator getting its head blown off. It can still, the body can still wake up and walk across half of Los Angeles and find its head. I'm like, you know what? No. Just send a new Terminator back from the future. Yeah, every week there was a new Terminator being sent back. We don't need a Terminator's frigging 12-episode quest to put himself back together. You know, I know Terminators are tough, but they're not that tough. It was ridiculous. Anyway, moving on. No, the thing that got me about Terminator is I really, in a way, I morbidly want to find out, like, where was the show going to go next season? You know, and, like, I really wish that the guys would put out this just statement saying, okay, here's what the show... Since we've failed to create a compelling show, here are just all the plot secrets that we were going to dole out over the next 5 years.
You're going to be waiting a while, because no show ever does that.
Well, one show, Murder Reunion, did announce who the killer was. So there was that.
Okay, but that was like, you know, full-on murder mystery.
Yeah.
You had to figure out who'd done it.
That's true. Which I did.
Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles is nothing like that.
No. No, but it was just like an outline of, here's what would have happened.
no reason for them to, you know.
I know. Give us information exactly. that we want. Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, because the guys from Lost have always said that had Lost been canceled in, like, season four, they would have, like, made the last hour of Lost just the two of them sitting in front of a camera explaining every mystery of the show.
I think it could still use that.
That actually, honestly.
Still a good idea.
Given how rough the season ender of Lost was. That would be a nice way to end the series, because did you see the season ender of Lost?
I haven't watched Lost since the first season, and even that I watched on DVD, so. Okay.
I'm not going to get into this, but, like, seriously, they spent this entire time, like, who is this Jacob who is the runs the island, who's the king of the island? And then, so, in the opening sequence, we meet Jacob. Remember how in the first season they found that slave ship?
What?
That's where they got the dynamite to blow open the hatch. It was the whole first... slave ship.
Okay.
Anyway, wow. So back in the... on Lost, and the season opener of Lost, season ender of Lost, it opens with, like, it's the year 1650, and here's Jacob, who turns out to be just some guy sitting on the island, and he summoned a slave ship. And then, like, the rest of the flashbacks were pivotal moments for all of the characters' lives that Jacob observed but had no role in. Like, it's not like he somehow helped them along to come to the island or, you know, pivotally helped change their lives and shape them. He did nothing. He was just there watching them. So it's like, and we get to the end of the season and then he gets killed off without revealing anything.
Such a big waste of everybody's time.
It was
time.
A huge, like, unless there's just, unless next year all 17 episodes are just people explaining things to us, the audience, I feel like there's no way this can have a satisfying resolution.
Which, you know, this kind of leads into the main topic for the show.
Yes.
And I'll repeat myself again a little later on. But, you know, my feelings about J.J. Abrams, now he's a good idea person, but not always so great with the follow-through.
He's terrible at executing things. You're absolutely right about that. But anyway, I just wish Terminator, honestly, I just wish Terminator, the guys would just write down a little document, post on the internet, do a little YouTube video or whatever it is the kids are doing these days.
Oh my God.
I know. It just reveals, here's all the secrets of Terminator.
I am embarrassed to know you right now.
I know, it's pretty bad. Okay, but, so that's the good news. Here's the good news. Which I'm sure, if you're the kind of person who's listening to the AVOD, who's watching the AVOD, you already know. Dollhouse is back.
Yay!
So,
yay! I always knew it would be.
Really?
You were too cynical.
You knew it was coming back. Even though it was like the least watched show on television, other than Prison Break, you knew it was coming back.
I knew in my heart. I don't know why that's so funny to you.
It's funny to you, too. Look at you. Anyway, I know, it's coming back. Apparently, whatever he said to Fox convinced them that the second season was going to be badass, and they renewed it, but they're leaving it on Friday nights.
Oh, that's a bit of a shame.
But... Hopefully, that means they have no viewership expectations for it at all. That even if it does, like, even a little better... They're like, no, let's keep this on. It's doing a little better every week.
Well, I've been telling everyone I can, and by that I mean two people, that they need to watch Dollhouse and are, you know, silly to have not watched while it was on TV.
That's true. The big deal now, though, is that everyone has to buy the DVD. Because that'll show, if the DVD sells huge and Fox makes a lot of money, then they'll realize, oh, well, if we have a full second season DVD, that'll sell huge too, and blah, 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 blah. Right now, the question is whether they're actually going to air the 13th episode or whether it's just going to be for the DVD. So they still haven't announced that yet. But the DVD is going to be worth purchasing anyway because Dollhouse is great. And you get to watch the unaired pilot.
That's true.
Yeah.
Things to look forward to.
So there's plenty of stuff to look forward to. It's going to be very fun.
Right.
Mm. And hopefully in one of the commentaries, they'll be like, well, in the script, we created a Japanese character, but we're like, screw it. Let's just cast that guy we like from Firefly.
This is what you're hoping for?
I'm hoping for an explanation for why the character of Tanaka is played by Badger from Firefly. Sleazy British man. No, I mean, it's not a big deal at all. Fine. He's named Tanaka. It's just, I remembered that, like... when I was writing this ridiculous outline for a movie. It's like, my favorite thing are movies that are set in the future that are way more futuristic than like 20 years would possibly give you. It's like when Godzilla movies were set in the 90s, and it's like, here, we have conquered the planets Venus and Mars, and I'm moving on to Jupiter. Really? You think in 30 years you would have had a city on Jupiter, you know? And so, like, it was this outline for a future sport movie where set in, like, the year 2019, where society has crumbled and only... you know, only sport, competitive sport is left. And the lead character is a guy named Kenji Muntumbwe, and he's white. And I'm like, because that's the screwed up name they have in the future, where all races have mixed, and a white guy would have this crazy African-Japanese name. But it's 2019, and the character's 25, so apparently he was born in 1997.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Did I do that math right? 2019?
I don't know. I can't count.
24? Yeah, I think I did do the math right. Or at least close to it. But yeah, no, it was like, and that was the joke. You know, that was one of the many jokes in this stupid movie outline. It's like, and I abandoned that because it's like, the humor here is just too ridiculous for anyone want to make this big of a movie. Like, people don't like spending a lot of money on like, surreal conceptual comedy, because when they do, it fails miserably. For example, Death to Smoochie.
I like Death to Smoochie.
I love Death to Smoochie. America did not agree with us.
America disagrees with us on a number of points.
It's a film where every Death to Smoochie, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, is a film where every plot conflict is resolved by the Irish mob killing someone. That's an obstacle. The Irish mob will kill them. Oh, okay. I guess that obstacle's over.
Part of the brilliance.
Part of the brilliance of that movie.
Unrecognized by, I guess, a good majority of viewers. But although, moving on.
Although you got to say, part of Death to Smoochie's problem was it's like, the movie was clearly written because someone was pissed off about the Barney craze. And then the movie came out 6 years after one cared about Barney anymore.
Yeah, I had a bad timing, I guess.
That was some pretty bad timing. But hey, Jon Stewart got to be in a movie, so there you go.
It's true, and I do love Jon Stewart.
He is great when he acts. What a weird thing to compliment. Jon Stewart's acting. Anyway, so Terminator's gone. Dollhouse has been renewed. It's a great day for television. But, and I wanted to take a little time here to talk about a show that is very close to my heart that I never talk about. I rarely discuss because I'm the only person who watched it by the end. But that show is Prison Break. And I'm going to say something controversial about the show Prison Break. And please feel free to interrogate me about this point.
Does it have anything to do with
a
character named Teabag?
No, it does not. Thank God. But anyway, here's what I'm going to tell you about the show Prison Break. It had one of the best series finales I've ever seen in my entire life. Ever.
Didn't someone get shot by his mom?
No. Well, yeah, that did happen in two episodes before the end. But listen,
oh, okay.
It had, like, I've seen a lot of shows, and I've seen a lot of shows to the end. And
oh, he has to make a choice between, like, his brother and his girlfriend, right?
Yes. But that's not what I'm talking about.
Oh.
I'm just talking about how a show that was not a great show, by any means. The first season was just ridiculous. The second season actually got kind of entertaining because they added William Fichtner to the cast and gave the show kind of a villain who was chasing them.
Well, you just really love William Fichtner.
I do. I'm a huge fan of that guy. But when has he ever been bad in anything? Like, he's just great. But anyway, then season three was among the worst years of television that has ever aired. Because, seriously, like, the third year, they're like, the show's called Prison Break. We need to put them in a new prison.
Oh, is that when they're in Mexico?
Yes, they're in a prison in Mexico. And it was the stupidest thing you've ever seen in your life.
See, what I guess, failed to understand about Prison Break,
yeah,
is that it's about breaking out of a prison.
It's really not, though.
I would expect the show to end When they broke out of prison.
I think the title really hurt the show because that's what everyone said. It's like, I wonder how it's going to end. Wink.
Like Murder in the First. One season, one murder trial.
Do you mean Murder One?
Oh, Murder in the First is a movie.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon.
Sorry. Murder One. One season, one trial, verdict over, done, no more. Tried to do a second season, but they changed the format a little.
Yeah, the mistake is they changed the format. It could have been great if they had another year-long case, but they didn't.
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about. You have sort of a year-long story, and then when the story's finished, mm-hmm. you're done. So with Prison Break, I'd expect this year-long attempt to break out of prison, and once you're out, you're done.
But the thing is, and this is what I'll give the show, they tried to create an overarching plot with a conspiracy and a cabal of industrialists who help pull the strings in the world and blah, 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 blah. But the thing that's so interesting about this show is after one of the most disastrous seasons in the history of television, in season 3 of the show, like even though the ratings were just hitting the tank, they got a fourth season. And the funny part is, the whole third season, they're like, we need you to break this guy out so he can get a thing from a person to a place. But they're retardedly nebulous about what it was they were trying to do. And if you watch the show, and if you watch at the end of the fourth season, like, I haven't done any research, but I swear to God, an entirely new creative staff took over in the fourth season because they just threw out the entire third season. They're like, when you find out what it is they were there to do and what was going on, you realize that is not at all what they had suggested in the third season. That is not what they had planned. They just threw it all away so they could do the fourth season the way they wanted to. And I've got to give it this. The fourth season, while not a great show by any means, was a competent weekly thriller. Right, like it was a competent thriller where every week they have to do a new thing to try and steal a thing, and then they were trying to steal a thing from some people. It's not really important what it was. The show remained kind of nebulous. Okay, I'll just tell you the one thing we found out. They were trying to steal solar power from people.
From the sun?
No, the secret of like functional solar power. You know, like, solar power that actually works.
Solar power does work.
No, but gets, like, 89% energy conversion instead of 20, which is what we're getting now.
Okay.
We're getting, like, 20% energy conversion right now, so it's not viable to get all of our power from the sun, but with this, it would be, is the idea, okay?
Okay.
I know, it's silly, but more importantly,
still not sold, but okay.
Still not, you don't have to be sold. I'm not asking you to buy the DVD. Don't worry. What I'm saying is, like, at the halfway point, they're like, of the season, it was clear they were going to get canceled. Like, it was clear there was no more. But instead of, like, pulling a Terminator and trying to, like, give a big cliffhanger, they're like, no, we're going to go out in style. We've got 6 episodes left to film, plus a 2-hour season finale. They let them do, apparently, a 2-hour series finale in addition to the episodes they had planned.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's like, let's throw out what we had planned and let's script out.
Wrap it up.
A finale, like a real building to an end of the show. And so it's this great march to the ending. And then the 2-hour finale, literally everybody comes back for the, like, everybody who's still alive and one character who we did not know is still alive, which was a nice surprise. Like, everybody who is still alive from the show showed up to have their nod and play an important role in the finale. And in the best part, like, at the end of the show, you're like, this is exactly the ending I want because it's kind of a happy ending. They wrapped up every single character's storyline. They managed to get closure for everything. The bad guys got punished. The good guys got away. Like, it was just a completely happy ending. And they even, like, nodded back to stuff that was unresolved from the first season. Like, they covered everything. There is not, at the end of that show, I mean, maybe if you're a huge Prison Break nerd, if there is such a thing, there's something I missed as only a casual viewer. But what I've got to say,
you don't view anything casually. I'd like to put that out there and make it known.
All right, you got me. I am not a casual viewer. I'm an obsessive viewer of everything. But anyway, right at the end of the show, everything was wrapped up. All the loose threads were tied off. It was perfect. It was completely satisfying. It was exactly what you wanted out of the show Prison Break. And I gotta say, like, the whole show has raised a lot in my estimation because it has such a good ending.
That's interesting because how the ending can affect something. Because you and I have seen a lot of movies where, you know, that the movie is really good up to a point, and then the ending is just so friggin' stupid, it has destroyed your enjoyment of the movie. I'm thinking of Haute Tension in particular here.
Oh, God.
But similarly, or conversely.
Conversely.
Not sure which one to use in this case. You'll watch a movie that is just horrible.
Yeah.
It is like the worst thing imaginable, but it ends so well, you're willing to forgive everything because it was so satisfying once it was finished.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, that line is in the movie Adaptation. When Nick Cage goes to see Jeffrey,
goes to Brian Cox. Fan of Adaptation.
I don't like that movie a lot either.
I tried really hard to like it, and I decided
I felt like I'm not smart because I didn't like it. Like that's how
that's
that film
was
marketed. Yeah,
that's the problem. If you don't like the movie, well, then you were too stupid to understand. I'm like,
I know.
I really don't think that's the case.
But the thing is, there's the wonderful scene where he goes to see Brian Cox, who's playing McKee, who's playing Robert McKee.
Oh, okay.
Right, the script editor.
That's right.
So, like, to give him a tip about how to write a movie, and he's like, yeah, and the Brian Cox says, you know, it's like, people will forgive anything if you have a great ending. You know, it's like, people don't care how bad a movie is, how, you know.
That's true. I've got a really big problem with McKee.
Yeah, me too. But that is.
But you got to give him that one.
I got to give him that one. Like, a great ending will make up for a lot. And the point, and then the joke of the movie is that after the character, Charlie Kaufman, goes to meet Robert McKee, like, because the film has been so amorphous and not really clear what it's about, for the last 30 minutes of the movie, it becomes a thriller because he went and he talked to Robert McKee about how he should end the movie. So, I mean, it is a funny conceptual joke. I didn't like the movie overall, but it is a funny conceptual joke. So if you want to dismiss me as being a Philistine, because I've already admitted to not liking, to being too dumb to understand art.
No, you just said you didn't like art.
That's
it wasn't for lack of understanding. You just don't have any taste.
That's
or
true, which is what makes me a Philistine. Exactly.
For art.
But anyway, the thing is, I always joked about Prison Break being the stupidest show on television and blah, 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 blah. But I gotta say, like, because it took its characters seriously and gave them emotional resolution and gave the audience what it wanted and what it needed out of an ending, I've gotta say, I now respect the show Prison Break more than a lot of shows that I actually liked. And because it had such a good ending, I can comfortably recommend that people watch the show Prison Break.
Even the deplorable third season?
Well, you have to. You can kind of skip the third season, but you really need, like, tiny bits of it to understand. But I swear, like, there's a character in the fourth season, and you got to understand where Dracula from Blade 3, you know, had been. So, like, you do need to watch the third season. I wish you didn't have to watch the third season. I wish you could skip from season two to season three.
I wish what you just said didn't actually make sense to me, but it did. So,
John Doe / Dracula from Blade 3. There's another show I never watched, John Doe. But anyway, which, by the way, and I can't believe this is a callback, John Doe was a character where Dracula from Blade 3, you know, didn't have his memory, but he seemed to know a weird amount of stuff. And he was out there solving mysteries and trying to find out who he was. And I'll give them this. The creator of that show put out a statement. It's like, here's what the answer to all the mysteries were when the show was canceled after one season. So way to go.
See, I started watching Prison Break.
Yeah.
My friend gave me a season one on DVD. And I only got halfway through. I tried so very, very hard. And I couldn't do it. And her rule of thumb is, you know, she'll give a show 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And if she's not sold after that, then
she'll,
that's it for
quit
the show. So I gave it 6 episodes. I might have even given it a little longer. And I couldn't do it.
I understand, because it's pretty stupid. But, you know, now that it's had, because I have this mental problem where if I start watching something, I can't stop watching until it's over.
That is a problem.
That is, like, I have to know how the story ends. And being someone who has to know how a story ends, when a story ends well, I'm freaking excited. Because so many times I've followed a story to the end and been ridiculously disappointed. that they didn't really think it through at all. Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, you're going to make enemies with that one.
We'll see. But anyway.
I know.
No, you do know. But anyway, and it's clear that they didn't have a plan from the start of this show. Like, that's clear. But what is even more clear is that when they were going to the fourth season, someone came up with a plan and managed to weave it in the structure they had already built for the show. Mm-hmm. So they managed to give it a completely satisfying ending to the point where this ending is, like, just so right for the show.
That's good writing.
Yes, that I can now confidently say it's okay to watch Prison Break. You won't be disappointed if you watch all of Prison Break.
But you just have to get to the end. Yeah. You just slog through four seasons.
No, but there's good stuff in there. There's good stuff in there. William Fichtner is always entertaining. There's too much of the crazy child-raping murderer Teabag.
Whose name is Teabag.
Oh, my God.
I'm never going to get over that. That actually might have been one of my problems with the show.
Yeah, they really should not have called him that. I'm not gonna deny that.
But anyway,
the point is, satisfying ending. I completely recommend that if you want a kind of stupid show that at least has a good ending, by all means, watch that.
Okay.
How many shows have had a terrible ending?
A lot. I wish I could be a bit faster on the uptake.
I know, but there's a lot of them. You watch the last episode and you're like, meh. Whereas this one, literally, everything you want. To the point where the main action, and I hate to compare it to Lord of the Rings, but the main action is over by, like, the 1 hour and 40-minute mark, and the last 20 minutes is just housekeeping, wrapping up all the loose ends.
Yeah.
I'm like, so few shows take the time to do that. It's like, here's a quiet thing. Here's stuff set 4 years later, you know? Here's some what happened to everybody.
So, an epilogue.
An epilogue, exactly. And there's just one epilogue. There's not eight epilogues. It's not Lord of the Rings, but they have an epilogue, which what show ever has an epilogue?
That's true.
Yeah. So but, I was very impressed.
Okay, so you were well impressed with the end of Prison Break.
I was.
I was well impressed with something I saw recently.
Please. What an excellent segue.
Thank you. Okay. Before I begin, I want to say that I did not want to see Star Trek and was forced to do so by the Count.
Yes, I did.
Who didn't, in fact, end up going to see the movie.
I had to back out for personal reasons that I'm not going to get into here.
But I still went with my friend, and while we were, she was very excited to see this movie.
Oh, okay.
And I was just doing.
See, she's always been a genre movie person.
No.
She's not
a big horror movie person at all.
No, she's not. I just wanted to lie.
But she really liked TNG. She's a huge TNG fan.
That's Star Trek: The Next Generation for people who, you know, don't know.
Everybody knows. Anyway. So she was excited to see it. I was not that excited to see it. And we got to the movie theater and had to stand in line outside, actually, which was not communicated to us at all by the guy at the door taking tickets.
Yeah, it's a really, really bad.
Well, no, it was just him. He couldn't tell us where to stand in line.
Wow.
So we wasted, 20 minutes of our time hanging out trying to figure out what the deal was. Anyway. While we were in line, we started speaking with a woman behind us who was very, very excited to be seeing this movie for the third time.
Wow.
And she's gone with each of her children
to see the movie.
To see this movie.
Wow.
And I remember when we were talking about it earlier, your girlfriend complained that she was prepared to hate the movie because they were going to screw up the timeline.
Yeah.
And this woman in line, she made the same comment, but she loved it. She thought that was, like, the best part of the movie, was this sort of new timeline and this twist that they threw in. So Becca just got more excited, and I was still sort of holding back. We went and sat down, and no word of a lie, about 10 minutes in, I'm like, shit, I like this movie. It was so satisfying. It totally delivered on everything. I mean, it's very melodramatic because it is J.J. Abrams.
Yep.
The man loves his melodrama. But there's a lot of action.
Yeah.
You can see what's happening. And the special effects weren't overdone. It didn't sacrifice any content that I thought or that I saw for a huge special effects extravaganza.
So really, you really had a great time.
I really liked it.
Oh, that's so good.
It was good. And I thought, everyone did a good job with their characters. Not that I really know these characters or understand them all that well, because I didn't watch Star Trek. And I thought that it would be kind of hard for these people to sort of take on these roles and play younger versions of these iconic characters that people know and love. Because, like, Star Trek conventions were being held while Star Trek, like, the first season was still on the air. People were getting together.
No, it started, like, the year after.
No, I think it was in that first season. People were talking about it.
Okay, I haven't seen the movie Trekkies in a long time. But I guarantee they didn't do it until it went off the air. But anyway.
No, it was while the show was on the air.
The show was only on the air for 3 years.
Yeah, and they were having conventions then.
Okay, well,
I'm telling you.
Agree. You know what? I was going to say agree to disagree, but we'll do actual research and find out for the next show.
Anyway.
Yeah, people love Star Trek is the point you're
making. That's the point I'm making. So these actors, you know, were faced with a real challenge, particularly What's-His-Face, whose name I can't remember, who played Kirk.
Man who looks exactly like James Marsden?
He doesn't look anything like James Marsden.
He looks almost exactly like Cyclops.
No, he does not.
He really does.
No, because I hate Cyclops.
And you love this guy.
No, I don't love this guy either, but he doesn't look anything like Cyclops.
He looks almost exactly like Cyclops, people.
Anyway, I thought, you know, like, there's only one William Shatner, let's face it.
There is only one William Shatner.
But he
sadly.
He wasn't putting on a Shatner, which is what I thought he might try to do. He kind of gave the character his own life. It was interesting.
He would be crazy to try and be Shatner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was well done, and it had Carl Urban, who I really like. He was Bones.
Yeah. I do like Carl
Urban. And Siler was Spock. And
I
holy
do hate
crap.
Siler.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Good.
He did a good Spock.
It was fucking amazing.
Considering how much I hate
and,
him on that
like,
show.
No, possibly the hottest character in the movie.
Spock.
Funnily enough, because, like, not only does he have this sort of steamy romance going on with one of the other characters, Kirk gets, like, little to no action in this movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. Kind of. It is funny.
It is funny. Okay.
Yeah, so it's sort of like this little, and it's this joke that kind of plays throughout the movie, that he keeps getting distracted by women, but
he just can't get the game.
Yeah.
Aww. You know, the thing is, I am going to go see the movie this week, so obviously we can talk more about it when the AVOD returns from its brief hiatus next week. That's right, there's going to be a brief AVOD hiatus next week, except for
We can talk about it later.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about it later. Okay. But when we return for a brief hiatus, we will talk about that and Terminator, because Terminator comes out between now and then.
That's right.
And we're definitely going to see Terminator right away.
We are, but I'm not done talking about this.
No, we're not. No, what I'm saying is, I fully intend to see it, and I got to say, I'm a little surprised that you ended up liking it, given your ambivalence towards
Star Trek. And this, you know, leads back to what I was saying before about Abrams, is that he has a good idea, but he can't always execute that idea. But Abrams is a huge Trekkie, so
pretty clearly from this, he's a huge Trekkie.
So he did it. I mean, he took something that he loved, and he did a really good job with it. I really liked it, and you know, sort of all Star Trek movies are kind of ridiculous and a bit stupid. And this, you know, doesn't lack for ridiculousness or stupidity.
At
some points. But he did a good job, and the whole timeline thing, he kind of covers his ass a little by saying that the events that take place in this Star Trek movie are in a parallel
universe. So it's like the mirror universe.
An alternate reality. I mean, this one character travels back in time.
And it creates a branching timeline.
Exactly. So that's what this is. You're just, so Chuck that you know and love is still intact, just
here's the branching timeline. So
alternate reality.
Just as the bearded, the goatee mirror universe was evil, this is the alternate universe about really shiny young people with lots of lens flare.
Yes. The man loves his lens flare.
I'm sorry, the funniest thing
and
is it's a commercial.
Hot spots all over the place.
The funniest thing in the commercial is like the shot of Eric Bana, who's on the bridge of, I guess, whatever his ship is, that essentially looks like a sewer, and there are still lens flares.
No.
Like, it looks like he's an underground sewer, and there's still lens flares everywhere.
Interesting that you said his ship looks like a sewer because it's a mining ship originally. So that's a well-made point.
Well, no, and the other thing I noticed, I asked someone who saw it about a thing from the ads. I'm like, and the person who saw it was like, yeah, that's true. The thing I asked was, does Eric Bana's ship have fewer railings than any spaceship since the Death Star?
Yes. you say that because there's this moment when a black costumed Kirk, he's a young man, goes to meet Eric Bana, whose character is called Nero.
Yeah.
Who does not play the violin. Doesn't
play the violin.
I know.
Come on, people.
Anyway, goes to meet Nero for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Nero is standing in front of what looks essentially like the round window on the Death Star.
No!
I shit you not, it is lifted right out of Return of the Jedi.
Oh my god.
He's the Emperor, Kirk is Luke.
Wow.
And they have a little fight.
Oh my god. You know, the thing is, it's like,
I think he might actually fall down, you know, sort
chasm.
Of a turbo trench kind of thing. Or not okay. Turbo trench.
No,
turbo
the
shaft.
Reactor core. Yeah.
Reactor core. That's thing. Oh, for shame. I can't believe I just made that mistake.
The thing is, what I had heard was, and I expected to have an okay time in this movie. I mean, I'm an inveterate Trekkie, so obviously I've seen every Star Trek thing ever. So I take issue with you saying that there's anything stupid about the movie Wrath of Khan, the best movie ever made, or Undiscovered Country, the third best ever movie ever made. Or The Voyage Home, the second best movie. Right. But anyway, that's a different conversation. That's a different show. But what I'm going to say is what I've heard from everyone is that don't go in expecting a Star Trek movie. Go in and expecting an action movie using the trappings of Star Trek, the characters of Star Trek and the technology of Star Trek. But it's just an action movie in space.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a sci-fi movie that sort of happens to be about Star Trek characters, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't go expecting like serious Trek because you're not going to get it.
Yeah, you're not going to get a message, for example, or an idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no memes here. But
please don't say meme. Continue.
What?
I just oppose that term. Anyway.
Meme is an idea.
No.
We're not going to have this conversation right now. Yeah, it is. No. We're not having this conversation.
You know what? If you mean the word idea, say frigging idea. You know what? We can table, we can put a pin in this until later.
God. Why would you do that to me?
Because I'm trying to get it drilled into your head so that you will start looking for it the way I am. Oh, by the way, if any of our home viewers know where that thing started, please tell us. Anyway, Star Trek, one, please go see it. One, I am going to go see it, so.
Yeah, and I think this might represent, I guess, maybe the best attempt to reboot, if I can use that term, a franchise.
That you've seen so far.
That I've seen so far, without alienating or pissing off the original fan base.
Yeah.
Because, you know, All the recent remakes we've seen have
been designed to piss off the original fan base.
Oh my god!
Well, we're getting to that in our remake show, but I gotta say, this is probably, unless I wound up hating it, in which case I'm gonna spend the show 2 weeks from now just yelling at you for 20 minutes.
Won't that be fun?
That'll be a blast for all listeners. This will probably be the last you hear about Star Trek until the remake show. But which I think we're going to do towards the end of the summer when there's no television,
finished watching Alias.
Yeah, and the threat of Halloween 2 H2 is looming over our heads. I think that will be a perfect thematic
time
to look over
remake.
The remake show.
Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, so that is Star Trek, and now I just realized something. This is supposed to be a horror-themed podcast.
And we haven't talked about horror movies at all.
So I do have two pieces of horror news. That was air quote news for those of you who are only listening to the AVOD.
All right, lay it on me.
Okay, well, first off, this isn't so much news as so much a story about how I'm a jerk who does not deserve happiness.
We all love those stories.
Is that,
there's so many of them.
It's like, As you know, it's like, how do I put this? I don't swear much, unless I'm talking about the film Inside, in which case the floodgates are open.
I swear all the time.
Yeah, but anyway, I swung by Dread Central, as I am wont to do, because they are a real horror website, and You know what was on the front page?
What?
It was like, our set visit to Adam Green's Frozen.
And I'm like, no!
Literally, I'm alone in my apartment. That comes up on the screen, and I just, like, curse to myself. Because apparently that's how angry that the idea of Adam Green making a new movie makes me.
I don't care if he makes a movie. I care if he makes a movie of people stuck on a fucking chairlift overnight.
But don't forget, they're going to have emotional anger at each other that will come out in a stressful situation, because that's how every frigging movie is written now.
I don't, you know what, I complained about this once before, and it's just, it's too easy for me to rip into it again.
We're not going to talk about Frozen anymore until we actually see the movie Frozen. I like that it's like, we have this, we've been doing now like two shows worth of angry previews at the idea of the movie Frozen. But anyway, but what's more important than that is that thing that I just talked about is the subject of the other thing. I did click through to something else on Dread Central.
Okay.
When I was doing it. And it's because the title jumped out at me. And when you hear the title, well, the title is part of the article because I copied and pasted the article because it's so just, well, it made me want to break my computer. So I knew I was going to have to share. But here is the actual thing. Okay, now this is from a DreadCentral.com article interview, right, by a Heather Wixon. So I am properly crediting this. DreadCentral.com by Heather Wixon. It's an interview with Sean Kane. Okay, now I'm not going to put a link to this in the show notes. So if you want it, rewind. But anyway, all right. Don't let the title Silent Night, Zombie Night fool you. While writer-director Sean Kane is clearly paying homage to the campy 80s slasher flick Silent Night, Deadly Night, there's nothing campy about his latest film. Okay, first off, that's not even the part I'm angry at, but let's pause and look at that.
Okay.
First off, I don't know if I'd call Silent Night, Deadly Night campy. Like, it's a kind of unpleasant movie to watch. Like, there's not a lot of fun in these Santa rape sequences. But anyway, it's absurd, but it's not campy. Anyway, two, it's like writer-director is the worst thing you can possibly see. Like, I just, in especially in genre, you know, especially in, like, low-budget direct-to-video genre, that's just a term, a thing you never want to see. Writer-director. Because all that says to me, it doesn't say to me that he had a unified artistic vision. It said to me that no one really looked at the script too closely.
It says to me a bit of micromanaging, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But here's why I completely dismiss... Oh, by the way, his latest film. Apparently Sean Kane has directed a bunch of other movies that I've never heard of. But anyway, here's why I went from just being bemused by his stupid title to outright hating him and everything he's ever done.
Okay.
Ahem. Silent Night, Zombie Night is really the story of three people who emotionally fall apart and come together during a zombie pandemic, explained Kane. So while, yes, the movie is about zombies, it's really about how these three people deal with their own issues during a horrific ordeal.
Oh my God.
Yep.
That's the last thing I want to see.
It was like the subtext, like the way they've been writing all these terrible movies. Not only is he saying he's writing it that way, but he's proud of the fact that he's writing it that way.
Seriously, there's a movie called Dark Days is something else. Days of Darkness.
Okay,
this is the same confusion I had a minute ago with Murder in the First and Murder One.
Okay.
Days of Darkness. Days of Darkness is a documentary that everybody should see. Days of Darkness is a zombie movie nobody should see because it's exactly that.
Yes.
It's this interpersonal conflict bullshit while people are hiding out from zombies. And then it takes a turn and becomes really quite disgusting. And possibly even more stupid.
It looks like this movie, The Signal, that came out recently. There's a weird thing that goes over the over all televisions, radios, and telephones that made people go insane, like that Stephen King movie novel, Cell, right? But it's like, we're not really interested in the world falling apart and everyone turning into barbarians. Let's look at this woman trying to get away from her abusive husband with her boyfriend. Like, no! That's not what we're interested in!
I can see a million of those movies! I want to watch the movie about the phantom signal that drives you crazy.
I know! I mean, it's like, oh no! Mad Max isn't about, you know, the Road Warrior isn't about a dude helping save guys in an apocalyptic world. It's really about the relationship between three characters among the survivors and their interpersonal dynamic. No, it's not! It's about a car chase! It's about the best goddamn car chase ever to have appeared in a film. A car chase where a motorcycle hits another car and a guy goes cartwheeling through, a real man goes spinning through the air straight at the camera. That is what it's about. It's not about people trying to find a thing. It's not emotional. It's not about people trying to get closure on their problems. Oh. I like that I can point to the Road Warrior. This is the structure every movie should use. Like, this is the perfect movie. There's nothing wrong. But it's like, I just find it weird that it's like, do people not know that this is a stupid thing to be doing in movies?
I guess not, because a lot of people are doing that.
But it's like, I guess I've always thought that, like, they're doing it because they're dumb and they've seen other movies like that. But to see... Wow, I'm just mean today. Sometimes my misanthropy is so bad that I actually pause and consider what a jerk I'm being.
No, I think it stems from the fact that people believe you have to have some kind of conflict in every scene in your movie. And all of your characters have to...
Yeah, have to be against one another
exactly.
In one way or another.
I was trying to not use the word conflict twice in twice in a row like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's just not the case, because if I'm going to watch a movie where a bunch of people are stuck together, you know, because of zombies or because they're stuck on a chairlift, you know, I don't... First of all, there's no way that these people... would spend a weekend together anyway if they hated each other.
Yeah.
And it would be a lot more interesting to see their friendship break down.
Yeah.
To just see them try and overcome their odds and bond through this shared, terrifying experience.
Yeah, that's... Well, who knows what the movie is going to be like. I mean, we can't talk about Frozen until we've seen it, but there's so many movies like that.
Exactly.
It's like, here's a bunch of people who all secretly hate each other. And, you know, I mean, I started watching this movie and I can't remember what it was called. I have it in the other room, so I really should be able to remember it. But anyway, I started watching this movie and it's like, there's all these people in Mardi Gras and, you know, they're all partying. And then there's a car crash and I literally stopped watching and I'm like, oh, so this random car crash is going to lead to, I guess, them being attacked by cannibals or something. And it's a movie, so that's what's going to happen.
All the time.
But it's like, what happened? And it's like, I don't have a problem with that. But then it's like, the second the car crashes, people start bitching about how, like, someone is there with, like, someone had broken up with their girlfriend and now she's with another guy and they're all on this vacation together. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't care about your interpersonal relationships. I don't care about who used to date who.
That's a little like Wrong Turn. Except Wrong Turn is perfect.
Yeah, Wrong Turn doesn't have any, you know, interpersonal
No, it doesn't, but it's got the girl who broke up with the boyfriend and is hanging out with their other friends.
Yeah, but the boyfriend isn't there with another girl.
Oh, that's true.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, so what I'm trying to say here is that, how do I put this? Sean Kane's a hack. And I look forward to watching his movie Silent Night Zombie Night so I can call him a hack in more detail than I am.
Oh, wonderful.
And you know what? If I'm proven wrong, I'm happy to be proven wrong. If it turns out to be a great movie, I will be the first person to admit it. But it will not. Okay. Did you have a final thing you wanted to get at? Because I have a final thing I want to mention before we move on.
No, not right now.
Okay, good.
Because, maybe like a final thing once you're done your final thing.
Okay, because here's something that happened to me. As I recently mentioned, I have gotten two review copies of things recently. One of them is that graphic novel, which the Dive Mistress and I are each going to read mm-hmm. and review
for an upcoming
AVOD. And if it proves worth doing, I will also get a bunch of images for it and, you know, do one of my retarded length reviews that I do. I mean, normally I only do those for CSI Miami, but I'll, you know what, this guy was nice enough to send me a copy of his book, so if it's good enough, I will. But anyway, the other thing I recently got was a copy of Christine Parker's movie, Fistful of Brains. Not A Fistful of Brains, but Fistful of Brains, which is her new zombie western. Now, we all may remember Christine Parker as the writer-director of The Forever Dead, the first film I ever reviewed for Castle Vargelon, who was nice enough to send me a copy of her new movie, Burned at Home, on her own computer. To the point where, like, I'm going to get some screen captures of this disc because it was clearly burned on a laser printer.
Yeah.
The disc label was a Philips brand laser disc cover.
Are you criticizing
no,
her?
No, not criticizing. I'm just mentioning.
No, 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 no.
I'm not questioning
the
homemade.
She took the time to make and send you?
I'm not questioning the homemade DVD. That's not what I'm questioning at all. What I'm saying is, and she was nice enough to also put in her business card, which I appreciate. Don't get me wrong.
And she signed it.
She totally signed it. That's not what I'm questioning. The point I was making is, when you go to make a movie, when you're doing the cover, you want to have... You want to put your best foot forward, because some people, if they don't like the cover, they're not even going to consider picking up the movie and reading the back, right?
I am one of those people, for sure.
I randomly will rent anything, because I just don't care about my time, apparently. But a lot of people, if you don't have a cover that sells you on it, they're not even going to turn around and read the back, and reading the back is what makes them rent the movie. But this cover has a thing on it. Well, first off, it has a Christine Parker film, and we all know how I feel about that, but I'm going to show this to the Dive Mistress,
okay.
And I'm going to ask her if she sees what's wrong with it, because there's something pretty wrong with it, and this would be a good time to look at the image for this AVOD, because we're going to use this as the image, so you can play along at home. So you can play along at home with this segment.
Okay, but well, it doesn't look very Western from the cover. I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to be.
Look just below the title.
Fistful of Brains, a Christine Parker film.
Does that say Christine?
It doesn't say Christine. Aww, it's missing an I.
Yeah, she misspelled her own name on the cover.
My friend once did that on a test, and she lost a couple points.
For misspelling her own name? My first thought was,
maybe she
spells her name that way. Maybe she doesn't put an I in her name, and it's a clever thing. But she included her business card which does have an I. Yes, so no. No, no. She misspelled her own name on the cover of her DVD.
And
you know what? It's possible she didn't design the cover. Someone else did it, and she just didn't give it the oversight you'd think a writer-director would. And the thing is, I have not watched the movie. I am not making a statement about the quality of the movie.
It sounds like you are, though.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, the first foot you put forward is the cover of your movie. Like, the first thing people are going to see is the cover of your movie. So make that look as good as possible. And I understand that some people can't afford great art. They can't afford someone to come in and do a great poster. They may not necessarily have the best Photoshop skills. They may not have this and that, right? But everyone can spell their own name.
Not everyone, because my friend can't.
Well, your friend can't. And I'm saying that it's like... So this is not an attack on Christine Parker. This is not going to hurt my appreciation of the movie. What I'm saying is, if you are making a poster for your movie, mm-hmm. have a second person look at it. That is all I'm saying.
Proofreader.
a proofread. Well, you don't even have to get an official proofread.
Ask your mom to look at it.
Send it to
you.
Your parents. Send it to your kids. Send it to your cousin. Ask someone at work, wherever it is you do. Just take a look at this and see if there's anything wrong with it. You know, I remember once I was at my friend's workplace at a TV station that I'm not allowed to specifically mention because apparently
I'm
not.
Why did you even mention that? You weren't allowed to mention it.
Well, no.
Why even bring that up?
Well, no, but he says, I don't think I'm supposed to be wandering around as much this TV station as much as I do. But anyway, no, but I'm there, and a guy's working on an ad, and the thing is, it's like, hey, you want to look at this ad? And I'm like, absolutely, I want to look at this ad, right? And so it was an ad for a block of television that went from 12 a.m. to 4, that went from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m., right? But he had written 11 a.m., to 4 a.m.
Oh, Jesus.
And the thing is, he's right there working on it, you know?
He made a mistake.
And why would he know he made it? He knows what he meant to write.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. I mean, that's why my work is always so full of typos, and it's why I need someone like you to read it, because I know what I meant to write, so when I look back over it, I don't see the typos, because I know what I was thinking when I typed.
See, that's why you should read everything out loud.
That also helps. If you don't have someone else, they read everything out loud. But, you know, like, that guy showed me the ad, so I was able to point it out to him, and he fixed it. In the same way, like, anytime you make a poster for your movie, run it by somebody else and just see what they say. Now,
well, this is an advanced copy, so
I'm sure she will have it fixed by the time it goes out wide. But it's just not what you want to see on the cover of a movie.
But you know
That's
what? It could
I'm
be
saying.
A lot worse because, and I've mentioned this numerous times in the past,
yeah,
that the copy on the back is sometimes so poorly written that I refuse to rent the DVD on principle.
You know what we're going to do?
So it's not even like, you know, I'm missing an eye is... Like, I would prefer to have a missing letter than bad grammar and bad punctuation.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing worse than putting an apostrophe where it doesn't belong.
Okay, that's fair.
drives me crazy.
Yeah. You know what we should do? And I mean, I don't know if we should do this as a show or just a feature on Castle Vargelon. Just come up with, like, a repository of just terrible back of movie.
That would be awesome.
Because there are so many times I have, you know what, I'm going to dig up my copies of Camp Blood, Camp Blood 2, and
oh, it looks like I'm going back to the video store.
Right, because those were the worst back thing written that I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, how did someone think this was English? Okay, so now that I've insulted a perfectly nice person who sent me a review copy of her movie.
I think that might be it for today's show.
I think we're going to be wrapping up the show with me feeling terrible about myself. So.
All right.
It's not what I meant to do.
And yet we always end up here.
How does it always end up here? thank you for watching. If you'd like to read more of my weird hatred for things and people, you can do so over at Castle Vargelon, which is vargelon.com now.
And you can read more from the Dive Mistress at zombots.blogspot.com and bamborgs.blogspot.com. The Count and I are both on Twitter. I was forced to join and I'm regretting it. But I am, in fact, more active on there than the camp.
I will start Twittering, okay? I joined it in order to try and win Hugh Jackman's charity thing. I never had any intent of actually Twittering. But now people are following. Tweeting, Christ, who cares? But now that people are following me, I like feel this need that I have to actually provide content. So I will, okay?
Oh, such a jerk to your fans. You know, first you need to build the fan base before you can alienate them.
Yeah, apparently I'm a bit...
You're going backwards here.
I think the clear thing is that I'm ambivalent to the whole idea of having fans. But that's an entire other part of my personality that I think therapy can deal with better than talking about it on the AVOD. But anyway, we're on Twitter. The AVOD is theavod.blogspot.com.
Send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. And that's it for the Die of Mistress.
And Camp Vargelon. Have yourselves a good night. Since we were discussing epilogues, we thought we should tie up all of the loose ends left at the end of the show. So thank you for listening past the end of the music this week. First off, it seems earlier I mentioned that I hate writer-directors. But then I talked all about Christine Parker, a writer-director, without calling back to that. We realized that was a mistake, and we apologize.
Also, earlier, you made mention of a friend's work, a television station, that you then quickly decided that you probably shouldn't be talking about, which led me to ask why you felt the need to bring it up to begin with, which is reminiscent of many conversations we've had on the topic of Harper's Island and the bag of cash, which people seem to think is important they disclose the nature of to the police. And causes a lot of trouble for the characters in the show. So I just like to track back to that.
Yes, in that last episode where they're like, of course we can't say our friend went missing. How are we going to explain stealing that bag of money? Here's a chance. Don't. Don't explain it. Don't mention it. Stop being a moron.
Right. So, you know, following that logic, don't mention that you happen to spend altogether too much time at your friend's work, which you're not allowed to talk about.
Yes. You make an excellent point there, Dive Mistress. And finally, and just one last note, we also didn't mention the big news, which is that apparently Harper's Island has not been pulled off the air completely. Last Saturday, they aired two episodes of The Mentalist instead of Harper's Island. But that did not kick Harper's Island's ass in the ratings. So this week, Harper's Island is back. So look for the normal update on that on Saturday.